Welcome to the Alt Asset Allocation Podcast, exploring alternative investment opportunities available to the everyday investor. Here's your host, Ben Lakoff.
Hello and welcome to the Alt Asset Allocation Podcast. Today's interview is with Ruben Yap. Ruben is the co-founder of Zcoin, which is a privacy-focused cryptocurrency. The world is moving towards cashless society. This means that 100% of transactions will be traced, surveilled, and censored. Privacy of financial transactions will be more and more important and harder to achieve. Ruben shares his knowledge on the current state of privacy cryptocurrencies, why Bitcoin is not private, but steps to use Bitcoin more privately, some updates on Zcoin, and many other reasons for why people should care more about their privacy. I've been converted from a I have nothing to hide sort of person to thinking that privacy is very important and very much lacking in many of the things we do, especially online. Just read Edward Snowden's book, Permanent Record. It's really important. Before you listen, please don't forget to like or subscribe to the podcast, or even better, leave a review. This really helps more people find the podcast and keeps this thing going, and it really, really helps. Thank you. Ruben is incredibly knowledgeable about this topic, and I hope you really enjoy this episode. Ruben, welcome to the Alt Asset Allocation Podcast. Glad to have you.
Yeah, so happy to be on, Ben, and it's great to see you again.
Likewise. From the other side of the world, I'm in LA, you're in Malaysia right now, right?
Yep, that's right.
So thanks for taking the time this early, and we made it work. I'm super excited to have this conversation, but I wanted to start for our users just a little bit about you, your background, how you got into crypto and privacy.
I don't think I took a very traditional route into crypto. Prior to doing cryptocurrencies, I was a corporate lawyer, and I did actually also a lot of like government advisory work as to how to draft laws for the state. So that was rather interesting. I did this for 10 years, was a partner of a law firm, and I actually kind of started getting into cryptocurrency more as a hobby and a curiosity in about 2013, so quite early. And I also ran a VPN service then. I think it was one of the largest VPN services in the region during that time. And what had happened was VPN services were considered taboo for some reason, for the same reason why privacy cryptocurrencies now are like, oh yeah, you know, we're doing illicit activity. Now it's so commonplace. But that time we were cut off from many of our payment processors. You know, our credit card companies didn't want to accept VPN payments, and we were doing a risky business. And of course, you know, with PayPal and all this stuff, there's really high fees, and they sometimes like froze your account for no reason. They just like freeze your account and like explain yourself. And it was a really horrible way to do business. So some of our users were like, look, you know, you're about privacy. You're about like, you know, being free from all this. Why don't you take a look into Bitcoin? Back then, you know, I was like, yep, what is this thing? You know, and I looked at it and I was like, well, can I convert it for cash? I mean, that was my first question as a business owner. And I just decided to accept it as soon as I found someone to be able to regularly buy and convert it to my local currency. And there was no exchanges available for us then. It was really like, oh yeah, I call this like random guy and buy Bitcoin from me. And I should have kept it. I mean, I think Bitcoin was like $70-$80 then. Should have just kept it all. But yeah, that's kind of how I got into cryptocurrency. And then I went through the entire thing, mining, you know, of course, trading, losing money on exchange hacks, getting scammed. And I also was like really involved in privacy cryptocurrencies, especially in Dash, then that was previously known as Darkcoin. So also familiar with Monero. And I guess in 2016, there was this opportunity to join Zcoin as a part-time community manager. And I've done all the whole, you know, whole shebang. I just want to see what's it like actually working for a cryptocurrency. And I just did this on my spare time. I was still a lawyer. And that's kind of how it all started.
Nice. Yeah, and this is a, it's a similar story for like WikiLeaks, right? They were cut off from the financial system and Bitcoin provided another option to still receive payments from customers or collaborators and things like that. Interesting that that was kind of the way that you got hooked as well. Having a VPN service and now working with one of the top privacy coins in the space, why privacy? Why is privacy so important to you that you have spent such a big portion of your career working in it?
I actually see like privacy is one of those things that has kind of been eroded over the years, you know, like it's all together with censorship, you know, the growing power of the state. And I wouldn't even call myself an anarchist or a libertarian in that stuff, but it's just like I believe that there should be a balance between the power of the individual and the state. And one of these things is basically the right to privacy, right? Like if the government or authorities or even companies, right, we're giving all our data away right now, and a lot of people don't realize that this data, especially, it can be used against you. Like for example, like what's happening in China right now, it's not just a matter of monetizing your data, it's about monitoring your behavior and seeing what is right and what is wrong. And I've kind of gone down the rabbit hole of looking at how governments use their power. And I mean, if anyone has had any run-in with tax authorities, especially in my area, sometimes they will try to get you on things that are legally, you know, there's no basis upon it, but you know, they try to maximize the amount of money they're trying to extract from you and dig up all sorts of information. You have to kind of answer, and the time you just wear you down. And if you don't have the sufficient legal and accounting resources, you just say, oh, I'm gonna pay this up, right? And similarly, like, you know, in China, if you like offend somebody, like a high-ranking official, or you're doing like, you know, what would they call like undesirable behavior, you know, they can cut you off from the financial system using their social credit score. And this is all ties in into payments as well. So, I mean, yeah, I'm all about like, you know, financial payments, but I also think about privacy as a whole. And the idea is that like how in our mind, we don't tell everything that comes to our mind. It's not because that we are like evil people, all sorts of stuff come to our mind, but we have to have that ability to filter what we show to the world at our choosing, right? I may have some like, you know, like private thoughts that I don't want other people to know. Not necessarily I'm a criminal or anything like that. That's kind of how I feel about privacy, yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The China social credit system is just total dystopian nightmare, right? Like you spend too much on video games, it's all tracked and you're dropped a tier in the social credit system and have trouble getting it. It's really playing out a number of trends that we see nowadays, like to the extreme, and seeing how bad this could actually get. And for me, I mean, the world is moving toward a cashless society. Digital currencies, whether they be cryptographically secured or just a digital version of cash, the world is moving toward this. But the problem is that there are 100% of these transactions are traced, surveilled, and potentially censored, right? Which becomes a very, very big issue. I think the most common question with this that I get a lot is, you know, I have nothing to hide. I'm not doing any illicit transactions. Why should I care about privacy? What do you say to people like that? Do you use the private thought example? Or what do you say to them?
I mean, the private thought is a good example, but at the same time, it's, you know, you say you have nothing to... The person actually like kind of popularized that phrase was actually Joseph Goebbels, so who I think was the Nazi propaganda chief, you know? And it kind of shows you like, you have nothing to, you have nothing to fear, you have nothing to hide. It shows that they are the ones that decide what you should hide or what not, right? Like, I mean, that's like, well, these type of thoughts are illegal, right? And that is really at the crux of it, right? And again, I don't think about, again, it's not about trying to hide. It's about the ability to choose what to keep private. I think that's a very important distinction there. And if everyone, I don't go around, I don't want to live in a glass house, right? And have my neighbors see what I'm doing. It's not because I just want to be myself, right? And we have to be able to let loose, to do things and like not be scrutinized. It's almost like, can you imagine having like someone that scrutinizes you every single moment of the day, what you pay, what you do, who you talk to, what you write? And you can easily take any of this out of context. I mean, we've seen all the, like, you know, how this political stuff, even the smallest thing can be blown out of proportion, taken out of context and used against you. In this era, you know, people are still not smart enough to distinguish flood and one, and we seem to think that everyone's perfect. We're not. We do mistakes and whatnot. And the right to privacy is also the right to do mistakes and you know, not have it like blown up every time in your face all the time, right? You know? So I mean that's kind of why I would say that. I mean, like, seriously, you're okay with, you know, everyone checking the whole world checking your email? You wouldn't, right? And this is like, if you have financial privacy, it's like giving access to someone, anyone in the world, access to your bank account, all your financial statements. Is that right? Do you want to be a target? Like, oh, I know you have, like, you know, 500 Bitcoin. Do I want that information out? It's not necessarily I want to hide, but I have that, know that I have this much of net worth, right? I think those are really real concerns there, yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing for me is just knowing how much companies know about you anyways for marketing purposes and these sorts of things.
Yeah. So
it's like my financial transactions are the last little missing piece because they're in disparate places all over and sometimes with cash. If you can somehow aggregate all of that, you get this really good profile of what I like, what I spend money on, what I impulse buy because I click on it and then instantly buy it. All of this becomes this very rich profile of who I am and then targeting. I mean, I'll just buy everything on Instagram, right?
and you also have to realize that from these profiles, I mean, Cambridge Analytica has shown that if I know enough about you, I also know what will be most likely to influence you to do stuff. And this is like super targeted to the max. Like, I know like all your fears, I know what, no, I can target a certain thing to feed you content, to sway your mind a certain way. And that shouldn't be possible. I mean, like, that's like really scary. And this is all like freaking automated, right?
Well, it's already happening, right? In the most insidious ways possible. So protecting at least a little bit of that would be helpful for sure. A common thing I normally see with people is like Bitcoin. Oh, it's super private. Obviously not accurate at all. Public, transparent, yep. Permanent. Ledger, permanent, yes. Ledger. What do you talk to about people when you hear that they say, oh, I just use Bitcoin, it's private?
I may be a bit biased because I think in my circles, I think people know that Bitcoin isn't private.
Fair.
New people who come in, they're like, oh yeah, you know, don't you, when I have an address, you know, there's no identity tied to it. So, you know, Bitcoin's often classified as pseudonymous, right? And the thing is that right now, I mean, yes, there are blockchain analysis companies, but there isn't that level of fear yet. Like, you know, I mean, like Facebook was collecting so much data and no one really knew until this whole thing scandal blew up. But the same thing is happening with like Bitcoin transactions. It's just that there's no drama to blow up. You know, it's still too small for people to care. But as you said, it's basically like a Twitter for your bank account or your Bitcoin account, right? And I mean, just a very simple example, like with the way Bitcoin works, if I have, let's say 100 Bitcoin in one address, right? And I go to someone and make a purchase. Immediately, he knows I at least have 100 Bitcoin, right? And like, why should I give that type of information away? And similarly, if I do a little bit more analysis, like, oh, he got it from this exchange, you know, like I start to build a profile of you. And again, that's one of the beauties of cash, where I'm buying a piece of a coffee. Why should I give you any indication of what my net worth is? what my previous transaction history is, what my salary is, that's none of your business. And I think that's really important, because like some people are like, oh yeah, you know, privacy. We're talking about not just privacy from the government, it's just privacy from everyone, anyone, you know, even your merchants. And I think that's a really important distinction to make as well. Yeah.
This is the thing, right? Blockchain is a privacy nightmare, really, because like you said, it'd be like going and buying a coffee and they see, oh, you actually have this much money, which is your basically your net worth. It came from this source and that source, and you also transferred to this address, and it's pseudonymous, but it's yeah, it's very, very transparent. I'm curious, Bitcoin, when used correctly with some privacy best practices, can be somewhat private. What kind of privacy best practices do you hear or do you follow when using something like Bitcoin? Doesn't have to be what you're using, because none of us actually have Bitcoin, right? If we did, we lost it in a boating accident or something. But
yes,
if one were to use Bitcoin, what privacy best practices would one use to ensure that you're following up privacy best practices?
So this, I think, illustrates a kind of like a problem with trying to be private on Bitcoin. Because when you start trying to do private practices, you stand out. Like, okay, I mean, I guess the most basic idea of Bitcoin privacy is use a new address every time you're trying to receive money, which works okay until, like, you know, let's say you receive 0.1, 0.1 and all in different addresses, but now you want to send one Bitcoin, you need to combine all of those 0.1s in one transaction and send out. Now I've just tied all these addresses together. So the moment I do that, the privacy is obviously lost, right? So that obviously isn't a great model. Of course, there are more advanced ways, like such as using what we call mixers, like coin join based mixers, such as, I think the most popular ones are like Wasabi Wallet and Samurai. But there's been cases where if you mix it and you try to deposit this, you know, mixed funds into an exchange, even though you've done nothing wrong, they're like, these funds are coin join. These funds have been private. I'm going to lock you down. You explain to me what has gone here. And they're like, well, this kind of like, you know, it's additional headache, right? And let's say if you're mixing, you could have accidentally mixed with someone who has done illicit activity. And then suddenly you just like caught into this, like, because the mixing rounds, they are not very big. Like you're mixing with, like, I don't know, 3 people, 5 people, 10 people. The moment that, like, you know, you get caught with, like, oh, well, I know this address was, like, involved in the drug deal, the money gets suddenly mixed with you. Suddenly, you're kind of, like, potentially implicated. Now you're like, oh, yeah, you know, these funds are potentially tainted. And the idea is that money should not necessarily have all this blacklist or tainting and whatnot, because I'm an innocent person. This is a freaking nightmare to manage, you know, like... Like, look, you know, if we did that to the US dollar, like 99% of dollars have like traces of cocaine on them. We're not going to everyone like, do you do cocaine? Do you do cocaine? Do you do cocaine? And that's the point, right? It's like, it's all about, like, I guess the fungibility, the, you know, the coins or like money should be indistinguishable from each other rather than each of them having like a unique history, a unique identity, which makes them different from another. I think that's really important. Yeah.
Yeah. Fungibility is a very important thing. At the worst case scenario, like essentially it would be these coins have been mixed. So they're blacklisted and you can't get out of them. They're tracked because it's transparent. So it basically puts a huge target on you as a user for having these illicit blacklisted coins, right?
Right. Yeah, this is going to happen. Like, you know, I mean, even Binance Singapore, you see like all the regulated Binance exchanges, they have this type of issues as well, you know, because they want to play nice with regulators. And the moment something goes through a coin drain, like, oh, it must be illegal. You know, there must be something that's different about this. And I think that's even this privacy mechanism isn't that good. It's just probabilistic between like a small amount of people, right? You really have to be so careful. Don't mix the funds, deal with, like, make sure that these funds don't mix with the other funds. It's you want to do privacy correctly, it's a freaking nightmare, you know. I was looking through like the so-called procedures they do on Bitcoin. You're like, why bother? You know, the better things to use for this. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So maybe a good segue. So there's a lot of different privacy coins out there. A lot of these privacy coins are actually implementing proposals that have been proposed to the Bitcoin code, but you know, there's not enough history or research to support them. That it's, you know, Bitcoin's, it's too risky, I guess, to implement for the Bitcoin coin or code. Walk me through the different privacy technologies that are out there and kind of what you're using at Zcoin.
I guess on the very high level, I guess they can be differentiated into two very large categories. One which is basically mixing, which is kind of like hiding in a crowd-ish, you know, it means, you know, mixing with other people. And the other would be, we call it something like,
wait,
something
I love, like your, zero I love knowledge. Your metaphor for the mixing.
Oh, no. You really want me to
use I that? Say it all the time whenever I'm talking to people. I attribute you, don't worry.
So the other mechanism is more like zero knowledge proofs. The proof that a transaction has happened, a valid transaction has happened without giving details of the transaction. So this is really like, really crazy stuff. And it's based on mathematics called zero knowledge proofs. So I guess with mixing, you know, stuff like Monero, stuff like Mimblewimble, stuff like Dash, they all work in slightly different ways, but in general, they're grabbing, you know, they're basically creating decoys around their transaction, right? And I guess I'll use the Lyft analogy because it's just so easy to understand. And the Lyft analogy is like, okay, you know, I want to pass win. I want to let out a fart in a Lyft, right? And with Bitcoin, I go into the Lyft, I let out a fart. It's me. It's this undeniably me. You know, I know this address did this transaction. Similarly, I'm the one who went to the Lyft. I made that fart. Now with mixing technologies, some kind of find everyone who wants to fart at the same time, trams them into the Lyft, and they all fart at the same time. So yeah, well, yeah, I know all of these people have farted, but I don't know whose fart is whose. I mean, that's one way to deal with it. Other mechanisms are like, okay, I want to fart. I'm going to drag like 10 other innocent people into the Lyft with me, and I'm going to let out a fart, and I'm like, well, this fart could have come from one out of 11, right? So there's like a lot of like plausible deniability, right? Well, approaches like with Zcoin, with Zcash especially, it's kind of more of like, I go into Lyft, I fart, and I just make it disappear. Like, it just disappears completely. And then at any time in the future, I can redeem this fart or make it appear again at any time. And now my plausible deniability is not just with people in the Lyft, right, which is limited by the size of the Lyft and whatnot, is basically with everyone who ever entered that Lyft, right? So obviously that mechanism is a lot better. And with our new technology, you can even pass the right to redeem that fart to someone else. So it's like, yeah, you know, I farted. I'm not going to make it appear. I'm going to pass this right to you, Ben, and you can redeem that fart. So suddenly that just like, adds this layer of, you know, obfuscation that is just so difficult, right? It's like your anonymity set is not just with everyone who was in the Lyft with you. It could be someone else who never even entered the Lyft because I could have passed that right to redeem to someone else. So I think that's a great way to view privacy technologies on blockchain.
It is. It's a great way. And it's unfortunate that it has to be talking about farts to compare it to something like cryptography and privacy, but it works. It makes it so clear in my mind. And yep. these are the main categories that exist. Where I want to go next is actually the risks. When you have this obfuscation, a lot of times, you know, these are untested technologies and cryptography. You have supply auditability issues and a number of things because it's a rather next-gen breakthrough cryptography. Talk to me to the risks of implementing kind of these newer technologies like this.
Well, I mean, with privacy, often you lose what we call auditability, right? Because, you know, with Bitcoin, you can always say like, oh yeah, there's X number of coins. I can track the history of every single coin. I know where this has been. I know this isn't created out of thin air. Now, just for the record, actually suffered two inflation bugs in its history. And what an inflation bug is that coins are created out of thin air and you know, from a bug or, you know, from a from like a failed check. And this has already happened two times. One which was actually exploited, the second one was patched before it actually did it. Someone took advantage of it. So it kind of shows like how difficult it is. But with Bitcoin, at least you can see, all right, yeah, you know, something can go wrong, but we know where, you know, we know what happened. We know how to stop it. We can see it happening immediately. Now with privacy coins, it's a lot trickier because you can hide the source. I mean, like, you know, when I'm redeeming the fart, I'm hiding who made. This is like what we call hiding the sender, right? But also another important element is to hide the amounts, which is basically, you know, that the amounts are obfuscated. I don't know how much you're transacting with. And the moment you start hiding amounts, of course, they are protected by certain mathematical proofs to ensure that, okay, you know, A to B, there's no coins being created out of thin air. You know, that means they call it like a balance proof. That means the proof that both sides of the equation balance. And there's something what we call range proof to make sure like there's no negative numbers, there's no infinity numbers to make sure that the equation makes sense, right? But if there's a failure in one of those proofs, or, you know, and it has failed before, like two very complex reasons why, coins can be created out of thin air and it can be very, very hard to spot because the amounts are hidden. So, you know, especially a lot of these new techniques, they use like pretty experimental cryptography, which, you know, hasn't really stood the test of time. So it's really hard to, like the rate of development of cryptography in the past, in this, like, you know, 5 years, is probably worth like 20, 30 years if no cryptocurrency was around, right? And just a huge rate of development. And obviously, time is needed to basically break these things, you know, reinvent them and make sure all this. So I think the technology is starting to get a lot more mature. But again, the technology is also moving a lot. So I guess the idea is that you're sacrificing auditability. And again, you're using much more complex mathematics, some which may be unproven, to achieve this privacy stuff. Because you have to realize blockchain is all about transparency and verifiability. And you want to add privacy on top of it. They're kind of like opposite stuff, and yet you kind of had to make it all work. It's pretty amazing stuff.
It's mind-boggling, these experimental technologies being used. It goes from public, transparent, permanent. This chain is always linked to that one, to this guy sent it. You don't know how much he has. You don't know how much he sent. You don't know who he sent it to. And you don't know any of this at all, but it's still incorporating a blockchain somehow. I mean, it's really tough to wrap your head around, that's for sure. But
yeah, definitely,
the clear thing that I see with something like this is regulations. Why on earth would any government allow something like this to be developed, that you can, you know, Bitcoin, USD Tether, all of these things are being used to evade currency controls and you know, small amounts of money laundering. Yes, no, it's infinitesimal compared to like the amounts that are going through actual cash, but it is what it is. It's being used for those sorts of things. With something like this, it's the perfect tool. It's a digital cash. With cash, I'm limited to the amount of cash I can fit into the back of a semi truck and mail over to somebody's house or whatever. But with this, you know, it's transmitted across the internet and untraceable. How do you think through regulations with something like this?
Some people may actually argue, I mean, to me, this is I think it's only a part solution to the argument, which is like, when I'm doing business, if I want to comply with GDPR, you know, when I'm doing transactions over the blockchain, I cannot reveal my customer information. If I don't encrypt it, or, you know, make it private, and somehow if I'm transacting over Bitcoin, I'm potentially exposing my client's data. Okay, all right. I mean, that's one way to interpret it, and to say that if I'm doing stuff on the blockchain, which is public to everyone, and, you know, I'm dealing, you know, I'm potentially revealing information about my customer, I may need to make this information private. Okay, yeah, that's one argument. But I think the other thing, so first of all, like, look, you know, cash actually still exists, you know, like cash is anonymous. As you said, it's limited by the amount that you can carry, but these amounts are still very, very significant, right? Like, and if you take a look at money laundering today, it's being done through banks and just through different mechanisms, like trade-based money laundering, where you, you know, send goods, but you inflate the price. You can do money laundering like that. And it's incredibly hard to track, because who's going to go and track every single, you know, item and say what, you know, you're saying like, oh, this bananas cost, you're overpricing this bananas. Like that kind of granularity is really hard. So if you want to do money laundering through the regular system, you know, this is still being done. I mean, like, you know, we don't even have to look far. Like the whole like Sinaloa drug cartel was like done by HSBC. And I mean, every single bank has been involved with money laundering. And most of the time it's knowingly. And what has happened to them? Very little, right? So if you're really like serious about stopping crime, why haven't the bank execs been punished? You know, I mean, that's another argument, right? Like you really need to do that. Now, it's so if you realize this, you realize that the ban on privacy is not so much about preventing crime, preventing money laundering, all that stuff. It's all about retaining control. And that's what it's truly about, you know, like a lot of this stuff, like even in the US, that's what's happening now, like, you know, the ban on Lawful Encryption Act, which is about basically banning encryption unless the government allows it, and allowing backdoors into the encryption so that they can read what they think is necessary and whatnot. They say that, oh, it's to protect, you know, against child pornography, to protect against, you know, sex, like sex workers and stuff like that, which hasn't really panned out. Or like, you know, even like terrorist activity, like how much of this surveillance has actually helped? I think that's actually a question that hasn't really been answered. It's not that we're against all these things. Of course we're against about it. It's all about proportionality, right? Like, okay, like, yes, when I go to the toilet, there's a chance that I'm going to slip down and hit my head and die. Yeah. What's the proportionate response? Well, yeah, you know, safety standards in the toilet. If the answer, yeah, I could have maybe someone follow you every time they go to the toilet and watch every moment of you so that you don't fall down in the toilet. But is that proportionate? I mean, obviously not. And privacy is about proportionality. And I think the way to see it is that you can still regulate it. And the way to do it is to regulate the conversion of fiat into cryptocurrencies. So even if it's a privacy cryptocurrency or whatnot, it doesn't really matter, because if you're depositing a large amount of cryptocurrency to exchange or moving over, you do your KYC, you do your AML, you still get 100% compliant, especially with the existing FATF travel rule. It doesn't matter. It was meant to deal with cash as well. So I don't think there's a necessary, obviously there's some criminal risk, but that is with the existing financial system as well, right? And I think that if governments go ahead and ban it, I think they're going to do the wrong thing, because first of all, by banning it, there are a lot of technologies to go around. I mean, like, look at the rise of decentralized exchanges right now. How the heck are you going to stop it, right? It's so difficult to stop a decentralized exchange. That's basically just code in the net and like people can access it, right? Unless you start censoring the internet and stuff like that. So if you ban it, the government actually loses more control, because it just goes completely dark. All the liquidity goes to decentralized exchanges, all this sort of stuff. There's no way to control it whatsoever. But if you do regulate it at the exchange level, at the fiat conversion level, yeah, all the liquidity is still going to be there because of the convenience and people feel more secure. But now you at least have that level of control, because you can see the conversion into money. But then if you're just going to do it in a decentralized exchange, it's freaking going to be a nightmare to even control. So I hope regulators realize that by banning it, you actually lose more control. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's certainly a headwind. I mean, if you cut off the legs of all these fiat on and off ramps, it makes it difficult. But yeah, like you said, there'll be some decentralized zero knowledge atomic swaps exchange that exists, and people will be able to swap it. Or you always have the meet at in the back of a Starbucks with a sack full of cash sort of situation, which still happens, right? With privacy coins, I mean, obviously one of the biggest blunders you can probably make is purchasing it from a KYC'd exchange and then thinking that you have a privacy coin and everything's going to be great. What other common blunders do you see? Well, I guess the other big one would be a lot of these aren't privacy like default. So you're sending transactions and they're not private at all. It's the same. What are the common blunders you see when people think or use privacy coins for the first time?
Well, first of all, I don't think there's anything wrong with buying it from a KYC exchange. You know, they know that, okay, yeah, you bought this amount of exchange, but once you have it in your possession, you can transact privately, right? There's not necessarily a disconnect there, right? I may be okay with letting the exchange know I got this amount of cryptocurrency, but now from then on, you know, my transactions are private with it. I think I don't think that's necessarily a mistake. Of course, if you want like ultimate levels of privacy, you don't do that. But I think for the regular Joe, that's not wrong. One of the things that people don't realize is that, yeah, you have your blockchain level of privacy, but there's also the network layer of privacy as well. Where if you make a transaction and you can be all using all these coin gen mechanisms and whatnot, but if I can tie an IP address to your transaction, well, there goes your privacy. So if you want to do it, do a VPN, use Tor, or use a privacy cryptocurrency that does protect network layer, that means it prevents your IP address from being linked to your transaction. So Zcoin does it, Grin does it, Monero just recently does it. So that's one way to deal with it. I think the other thing is to actually use the privacy transactions correctly, which is a lot harder than people think it is. So for example, with our mint and redeem mechanism, or even with like in Zcash or in Zcoin, when you anonymize your coins, it's best to wait some time before you immediately spend it, because you can have all this fancy stuff, but they call it like temporal analysis, where the time is like, if you anonymize it, immediately spend it, even though I don't know for certain, I have like a good chance to say like, this is probably the same person that's, you know, there's this pattern that's happening. So try to like, when you anonymize your funds, let it sit for a while, you know, a few hours or a few days, and only then spend it. Like, I guess keep your funds anonymous even before you need to use it. And rather than I need to anonymize it now to use it, I think that's a really easy way to improve privacy a lot. I think those are like some of the simple ways to deal with it. Yeah.
Yeah, a risk to all of these privacy coins is that Bitcoin just implements some privacy best practices and suddenly you can send Bitcoin in a completely private, anonymous way. Mm-hmm. Perhaps talk a bit about privacy as a feature versus, you know, privacy as a product with something like Zcoin.
Well, I mean, like, I think Multicoin Capital recently wrote a post about like how, you know, privacy should not be a product, it should be just merely a feature. And indeed, if Bitcoin does achieve like very good privacy, then, well, we should ask ourselves that, well, what's the point of all these privacy focused cryptocurrencies like Zcoin? But first of all, privacy always has trade-offs. You're going to have, first of all, you know, the loss of auditability, which I don't think Bitcoin will ever accept, right? You know, and you also have a lot more computational like resources to be able to do all this fancy mathematics. So there's also sacrifice in scalability as well. So I don't think Bitcoin, because of its nature of like being very conservative, you know, not introducing any things that may, you know, that seem experimental in nature, or like just losing the ability to, I mean, they couldn't even agree on the freaking block size, what more supply, being able to check the amount of supply, right? And even then, like even if you hide amounts, I think, which is also very unlikely for them to implement, then, you know, you still need to do so many other things to make privacy work that it doesn't really look like Bitcoin anymore. So I guess it's my point of view is that because it's a privacy-focused cryptocurrency, we can kind of gear our all our trade-offs towards the privacy element while trying to balance scalability. But because we design it as privacy in mind rather than just a tack on, because privacy is not just about this and this and this, it's all about like a holistic experience in the network layer, the addressing system, the source, the receiver. You really have to have a complete system that's designed around this, that's designed for privacy, rather than just tack on a certain system on top. Like, for example, like with Ethereum, you have stuff like Tornado Cash, which uses the same technology like Zcash. But the problem is that in its current version, you know, there's not many people using it, right? Because it's like an opt-in system. It's like a separate contract system. Then you run into the problems of like CoinJoin, you know, like, oh yeah, you know, you're flagging yourself because you came from this contract. So that means a lot of people. And for the all, Ethereum isn't like, you know, if anyone has transacted on Ethereum right now, you know how expensive it is to do it. Like, you know, $5, $10 a transaction. And now you have these additional computations that are not really like Ethereum wasn't really designed with it specifically in mind. You can do certain optimizations. It's going to cost even more. So it becomes like a very premium feature, which again, is going to hurt adoption as well. And at the same time, you still don't have the network layer protection with the current iteration of Tornado Cash, like, because you still have to pay Ethereum fees, that can also expose you as well. because like, yeah, you hide your funds, but you know, you can see where the fees are coming from. That I think is being addressed, but it kind of shows how difficult it is to just tack on privacy, because you have to solve all these problems and you have to do like a lot of jump through a lot of hoops to do it. So rather than do that, you know, that still has a lot of leakages and still a lot of problems, let's just focus all the privacy in the one product that is just about focus about providing private ways to transact. And you're gonna get much better product for privacy rather than something that's a Swiss Army knife, right? It's kind of like, I want a machete rather than a Swiss Army knife. It can do lots of things, but doesn't do any of it really well. So I would argue strongly that if privacy is a focus, privacy-focused cryptocurrencies definitely have to play a role in this, rather than trying to think of a way to have one coin do everything, because it's not possible to optimize a coin to do everything.
Originally, I had always thought of privacy coins almost as a sandbox for interesting features to eventually add to Bitcoin. And it was like, this is the Bitcoin train, and these are the sandboxes that you can play and experiment and, you know, oh, okay, it makes sense. Let's implement that back into Bitcoin. But yeah, I'm starting to come around to seeing multiple versions exist like this. I think that makes a lot of sense. With Zcoin, give me some rundowns. I know you guys have a big couple months coming up, or month really. I mean, packed into the next month. So this is being recorded as beginning of September. But yeah, give me some updates on your project.
Right. I mean, I think we'll pretty soon releasing, I guess, our new privacy protocol, which is called Lelantis, and it allows people to burn any arbitrary amount of coins and redeem them for brand new ones, even partially. Like I burn 10.5, I can redeem 0.32 coins. And all these coins, the ones that are redeemed, like have no previous transaction history. They look like virgin coins whatsoever. There's no fancy, like, you know, a lot of the criticisms of other privacy protocols is that they use a lot of like fancy mathematics. Ours is a relatively simple construction. It means not as many moving parts, so it's really good. That means like less stuff to go wrong. So we're trying to balance between simplicity, good performance, and privacy altogether. And I think Lelantis, which is our privacy protocol, which we created, does a really good job at. And I think Testnet should be mainnet in a month or 6 weeks after that. There's so many other stuff that's going on, like our DeFi integrations, decentralized finance. You know, we have ways to trustlessly move into the Ethereum ecosystem and, you know, participate in all the wonderful things that are decentralized loans, decentralized exchanges, and stuff that we not necessarily want to do on our chain. Let Ethereum do what they do well and let we do what we do well. So I think that's a good way to see like the whole cryptocurrency ecosystem rather than one coin trying to solve it all. Let's play into each other's strengths and do what, you know, what we're good at, right? And we also have halving. That means our supply emission is being cut into half as planned. And these are all like really, really big things that are happening in the next 1 or 2 months. Really exciting. And we're also doing a rebrand just to, you know, with the launch of Lelantis, we want to kind of stand on our own. I mean, I think some of the listeners here may still have confused Zcoin and Zcash or think that Zcoin is a copy of Zcash. It's actually no relation. Our technology is totally different. So we kind of want to make sure we disambiguate that and show that our privacy protocol really is, you know, we think it's the leading privacy technology out there that balances all the trade-offs in the best way possible. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'm really excited. I mean, I'm biased because I know you guys and the Zcoin team, but mm-hmm. I know that you are working very, very hard behind the scenes, you particularly, but the entire team, you know, so I'm excited to see Lelantis come out and hopefully the market reacts accordingly. But I think it's you're bringing a lot of value to the space, that's for sure.
I mean, like, you know, we always talk about the price and whatnot, but I also think that the technologies that we are building, it's not just about the price. I mean, the price is important, great. But I think that the tools that we build are going to be really important in the coming years, especially with the rise of CBDCs, like, you know, central bank digital currencies, which are very, very like the opposite of the original purposes of cryptocurrency.
And they're coming, and they'll be here.
Yeah, it's coming, like the DCEP. I mean, there's even talk of the digital dollar. And I mean, if you take even look at the old US laws, you know, there were controls to disallow the federal government from looking into individual, like, you know, bank balances or amounts or the information without like court approval or things like that. But now that's with a CBDC, that's just totally eroded, right? I mean, like, even the old people realized the problems of this, and now we're just like throwing it all away. So I think people have to be very aware and, you know, think about what they're giving up. And like, I think one of the really common things I talk about is some people, you know, violently defend their right to bear arms, to see as a way to fight against a government that's oppressive. And sure, but you can have all the guns you want, I cut you up from the financial system, let's see how long you last. I think that's also a very real risk. Like, yeah, you have guns of weight, you run out of bullets, you can't buy stuff, right? You know, like, I can just cut you all off, see how you feel. And you can't organize crap without money.
Yeah, very, very valid point. Well, you'd probably make a run for more food before you ran out of ammo, or at least I would hope if you had a bunch of guns and ammo. But well, Ruben, where do you want to send my listeners? Where can they find out more about you, about Zcoin? Where do you want to send them?
Well, we have a website at zcoin.io. You know, we're very active on Twitter at zcoinofficial. We have a very vibrant Telegram and Discord community. All the links are on our website, so you just go to zcoin.io. And yeah, we have a YouTube channel where I talk, give updates, and you can find out more about technology in little 3-4 minute bites. And I guess that's a great place to start.
Perfect. And I'll link all of those in the show notes, but really appreciate you taking the time this morning, Ruben, and thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ben. Real pleasure.
There you go. First off, thank you very much for listening all the way through. I hope you got a lot of value out of that conversation. As always, you can find show notes, links, and more at altassetallocation.com. Please share this with anyone you think might be interested and derive any value from this conversation. And as always, you can reach out to me for any feedback or questions. Please give the video a like, or even better, subscribe on YouTube or your podcast player of choice. This really helps others find the podcast or the video as well. Thanks a lot. Hope everybody has a fantastic day and stay safe out there and invest wisely. Cheers.